because he's pretty consistent with the in highly directing and giving low affirmation to his team.
Okay.
Then for number two, in a scale of 10, with 1 being the lowest, how effective is Mike's leadership and style, leadership style in terms of getting results from the brand managers and their teams? We rate it 5.
Okay.
Because Mike was unable to adapt to the readiness. At first, he was doing a good job in mentoring the brand managers and his team, but eventually, he wasn't able to adapt to the readiness level of the staff under him. And for 3, ideally, what style should Mike use? We've answered A2, A3, and A4. It should be progressive. We decided not to stick on just one style because
you wanted to hedge your bets.
Yeah.
I'm just joking.
All right. Yun. So we thought na it would be better if progressive yung leadership style na gagamitin ni Mike.
All right.
Depending also on the readiness level. And for number 4, what has to happen for Mike to change his style? He needs humility and honest feedback from the team. At the same time, he should also develop trust in sa team members. Yeah. That's it.
Jolene and team, thank you very much. Big hand for Jolene and team. Okay.
We decided that the dominant style of Mike is
commanding.
Teka muna,
na-confuse na ako. Ano ba pangalan mo?
Faye po.
Faye. Kasi pag nawala ka sa silang, I rechristen you. Yeah.
So the dominant style of Mike is commanding.
Right.
Then for number 2, in a scale of 10, we chose 5 because as to results, they were effective. But when there was emotional breakdown, then the results became lesser na.
Okay.
And then so, ideally, what style should Mike use? Empowering, since we think that his staff are R4 have that R4 readiness level.
Okay.
So he should apply the empowering style of leadership.
Okay.
And then what has to happen for Mike to change his style? We think that we agree with that. He needs humility to accept that. And besides that, we think that yung boss po niya, yung superior, should address this concerning him, not only yung subordinate niya. That's it.
Faye and team, thank you very much. Big hand for Faye and team. Okay, Varsha.
Thank you. The dominant style of Mike is A1, commanding. He is a micromanager. On a scale of 1 to 10, his leadership style is from 1 to 3. Because...
Okay.
How effective is his leadership style? 1 to 3. Because it's leading to a mass resignation.
Okay.
Possibly a mass resignation.
Okay.
So ideally, what style should he use? We said A3 and A4, empowering and involving. So definitely the directives can be low. And then we suggest having high affirmative, depending on the situation.
Okay.
What has to happen for Mike to change his style? He needs to let it go. He needs to chill. He needs to take a vacation. If he's single, he needs a love life. He also needs to attend the seminar. Marami kaming suggestions.
That's the best one, by the way. Yeah.
He needs to listen to the person who spoke to him, to the manager who spoke to him. He needs to meet with the group and hear them out. Also, apologize and then recognize where they're coming from and appreciate the person who gave the feedback, and then encouraged the team to work together to avoid the mass resignation.
Varsha and team, thank you very much. Big hand for Varsha and team. Standing ovation pa, you know? Okay.
Okay. What is the dominant style? Again, it's commanding. Right. He's a commander. Commander Mike. So in a scale of 10, he was effective actually in his style of leadership. So we agreed to give him a 5. Somewhere 5, halfway. And ideally, what style should Mike use? I think it should be more empowering, especially his brand managers actually nagde-deliver naman eh. Sabihin na, pero yun nga, I would agree with Varsha. He became too micromanager. So naging stiff siya. What has to happen for Mike to change his style? I think he needs to be, should go through one-to-one and victory week. And I'm kidding. So, meron kasi dito, he does not realize that he has some unresolved emotional issues that makes it difficult for him to communicate. So I think it has to start by realizing he meron siyang problema pagdating sa ano. And then he has to trust his subordinates and resolve emotional issues. Behavior, sabi nga nila, behavior modification.
Okay.
So that's it.
All right, that's James, right? James and team, thank you very much. Big hand for James and team. Okay, let me see. Dominant style of Mike, commanding to a fault. Okay? As Teddy was empowering to a fault, this guy is commanding to a fault. That's kind of obvious. The extremes are easy to diagnose, as you can see. The extremes are easy to diagnose. That's why I put the cases here. This is the tricky question. A scale of 10, with 1 being the lowest, how effective is Mike's leadership style in terms of getting results from the brand manager? Were the results still forthcoming in spite of the leadership style of Mike? Yeah, the results were still there. They were beginning to be affected, but the results were still there. I would give Mike an 8. Because in spite of his style, the results were still there, you see. Now, I have a very important thing to tell you. Because there will be people who are very high in getting results. There will be some of your people will be very good in getting results. You cannot stop there because that is factor 1. Factor 2 is developing people or taking care of people. See, when there is someone who is a high flyer because his team is producing good results, don't stop there. Walk around. Go to the work area and see what is the price of this productivity. Had the boss of Mike walked around, he would have seen Mike's people were dying. But he wasn't a walk-around person, and that's the case for next time. Because Mike's team was producing results, he wasn't walking around, didn't care. But you see, that's the danger. That's why I love this case. Because just because Mike is doing well, and he was doing well, you can't stop there. Okay? Because you have to, kailangan, you are an MBWA manager. And you go to the work area, you take the temperature of the people, emotionally, mentally, how are they? Are they dying? Are they burning out? Are they killing each other to produce these results? Okay? Very important point. It's a huge point. Ideally, what style should Mike use and why? Yeah, if you said involving, you'd be correct. If you said empowering, you'd be correct. Because they were ready for either A3 or A4. Okay. What has to happen for Mike to change his style? Okay. Did Mike have enough information about the condition of his people? Yes. Yeah. The brand manager went to him and said, look, we're dying here. We're not going to be able to keep this up. So he was not unaware. He did not lack information. Okay? So, short of that, two things that can make Mike change his style. Number one, indeed the mass resignation occurs. Or number two, he gets a heart attack. And he's in the ICU of Makati Medical Center or St. Luke's. Now, we want to manage things before they reach that situation. So the good people managers, the good leaders, will do something so that those quote-unquote cataclysmic or very expensive events don't have to occur. So what has to happen for Mike to change his style? Okay. You see, Mike is suffering from... Okay, just because you have emotional baggage doesn't mean you can't hack it. He is also suffering from the momentum of past experience. Okay, he's a hands-on person, and he's, you know, parang blindsided. Okay, yeah, he needs humility. Yes, I agree. But what does he need really? What should he do? Listen to his people. His people already told him the problem. He's not reacting. Huh? Recheck. Empathize. Very close. Affirmation. Before he begins to become an affirming person, what does he have to... Before he apologizes... the caring of his people is the result after he does what I think he should do. So, go ahead. Yeah? How do you get broken? How do you break yourself?
By acknowledging that you did something.
Very good. How do you get to that point? Repent? Okay. How do you get to the point of repenting? Because repent is changing your mind. How do you get to that point? What is the process called? This is the murmuring class. No one wants to risk their necks by raising their hands. What has to happen? Yes. How does one get to that point of knowing the truth and accepting the truth? What is the process called? Yes. How do you? I mean, if you're Mike, how do you get to a point of realization? Self-assessment, very close. What is the process called when you do self-assessment? I love to give you the answer, but as a good coach, I refuse. Lakasan mo nga. Very good. Okay. I'm looking for the word reflection. You were already there. Okay? You were already there. I didn't want to give you the answer because I wanted it to come from you. All right? Now, listen carefully. Okay? If you want to become an outstanding people manager, okay? If you want to become an outstanding leader, you need to become a person of reflection, okay? We call it quiet time. We call it meditation, reflection. You need every day. Reflection is you stop, do nothing. And where does the word reflection come in? I mean, what do you associate the word reflection with? Mirror. You reflect to see yourself. Okay, you ponder yourself. Okay? If you scan the history of the world and look for iconic leaders, to a man or woman, Christian and non-Christian, they are people of reflection. They pause. Jesus, my best example, made habitual reflection. He couldn't wait to get out from the crowds to be alone. Okay? Now, you and I, the busier you are, the more hectic your schedule, the more desperate is your need for reflection. Because the more lost you will be. if you allow the flow of the work, the flow of the pressure, the flow of activity to govern your life, you're in trouble. You won't become self-aware. Okay? You need reflections to become aware. Lord, what on earth is going on? Okay, so many years ago, I developed the habit. I wanted to do some quiet time. But you know what? I did it at night, and before I finished my quiet time, I was fast asleep. So later on, I carved out time in the morning. And I found out it was a lot more productive. The best thing to do, in my opinion, first thing to do is to, I have my coffee, I have my Bible, I'm seated in our lanai, I'm overlooking my beloved garden, which I tend because I became a gardener after I retired. Another chair is in front of me, I put my 2 feet up. I'm an expert in stress reduction. Okay. This morning, it had to be very early because I had to be here early. So at 6 a.m., I was finished with breakfast. It was 6:15. I was finished with breakfast. And the day was tender. And the morning, the sun has not yet risen fully. It was really nice and beautiful and quiet. Okay? And I begin. Remember, reflection is self-awareness. So I go like this. I'm not a morning person. So I'm groggy at 6:15 in the morning, even though I've had some coffee and I've had breakfast. I go like this. Today is Thursday. Right. If I get that right, I will get the second question right. Meaning, in all likelihood, yesterday was Wednesday. Right. Then I inventory my relational transactions, my attitudinal transactions, my other relational transactions from the time I woke up until the time I went to bed yesterday. I inventory everything. If I had a quarrel with my wife, that is a relational transaction. If I offended her, I make a mental note. I better behave myself and say something nice to her or apologize. I inventory who offended me so that I will forgive. I inventory who I judged, so I ask the Lord for forgiveness and remind myself not to be judgmental. So in other words, I inventory, did I sin? I inventory, did I learn anything yesterday? Was there a great learning experience yesterday? So I become aware of everything that's going on. Now, of course, when I was not yet a Christian, I didn't do this. And of course, the first time I did it, it took me 3 hours because I had to inventory my entire life so far. And I joined a prayer trip to Korea, and we were taught to pray for 3 hours straight. And we were in a cave, individual cave, and it was freezing. And I didn't realize I could pray for 3 hours. But wow, I was able to inventory everything. So if you become a person of reflection, 2 things will happen. Okay, I read a verse, okay? I read a proverb, okay? Sometimes I match it with a date, okay? March 12, Proverbs 12, okay? I read a psalm or a proverb or an epistle, okay? A chapter of an epistle just to get me in the mood, okay? And then if there's a sin to confess, I confess. Okay? But I go through it. You know, I learned 2 things. Number one, 2 things will happen if you do this. Number one, you will change because God will change you. Number two, you will stop reflecting because it's too burdensome. If you're fighting with God, if you don't want to settle your accounts with God, guess who will win? Guess who's going to continue to bother you until you settle? You know, it's going to be too burdensome. And I have to confess to you, there are days I am not in a mood to have reflection time. Because I know I'm going to be stubborn with God. And I say, ayoko yung kausapin kasi I don't want to surrender my life to you today. There are times I feel like that way. 2 things happen. I either change or I stop reflecting. But you know what? Every time I come back to where I continue to reflect, I grow. And I become aware. See? Iron Mike was not aware. He's not dumb. He could figure it out. If you're not aware, you're not going to be aware of the issue. You're not going to resolve the issue. Awareness is number one. Number two is my heart in the right place? And will I do what God wants me to do regarding this situation? But you won't get to the second part if you don't do the first part. Are you with me? Okay, so be a person of reflection. That's what I wanted to share with you. All right. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up. How to be a readiness-based leader. Number one, be selfless. Let the readiness of the follower and the goals of the organization, not your past nor your personality, determine your leadership style. It's not about you. You know, when I run this in public seminars or in in-house seminars, non-church audiences, they're looking at me, and I know they're going to eat from the palm of my hands, and I'm going to tell them this. I said, did you hear what I just said? I said, be selfless. And aren't you asking, don't you just want to ask the question, Alex, are we in a public seminar or are we in church? What on earth does selflessness have to do with effective leadership? Well, how about everything? Because if I'm selfish, why should I shift my style? I'm the boss around here. You adjust to me. To become a readiness-based leader, to become a person who will shift from one style to the other depending on the need of the follower, I have to forget my favorite style. I have to forget my typical style. In other words, I have to subjugate myself. I need to be selfless. And folks, I tell them, hey, we're not in church. But I'll tell you one thing. Unless you develop the spiritual dimension of your life, you will never be selfless. And I tell people, this is in public seminars. Okay, these are unbelievers for all I know. Typically, there's 5% believers and 95% unbelievers. I tell people, leadership is spiritual or it's nothing. Leadership is spiritual or it's nothing. You hear people in telecoms companies, you hear Bill Gates, you hear Steve Jobs. I don't know if they're believers. But when they talk, they tell their people, we need to connect with our people at the level of the heart and soul. You know what? Whether they realize it or not, they are arguing my case. That at the end of the day, leadership is spiritual or it's nothing. And you know what's the advantage of a believer? This is our narrative. This is our doctrine. Hey, we're supposed to be experts in selflessness because we have the Holy Spirit with us, and we have the capability through Him to be selfless. But the point is this. At the end of the day, spiritual leadership is spiritual or it's nothing. If you scan the history of the world for the iconic leaders of the world, Christian and non-Christian, they are to a man or woman spiritual. They are spiritual because, at the end of the day, this is my observation, leadership is spiritual or it's nothing. And the Christian, the believer, has a distinct advantage in becoming an outstanding leader because we are supposed to be well-versed in selflessness. Okay. Number two, be wise. Recognize the wisdom of being inconsistent in your leadership styles. Don't even use the same style on the same individual for all tasks. We've talked about this, okay? The virtue of inconsistency. Number three, be a mentor. We're going to talk about this in the next session, and you're going to love that session. Train, mentor, and coach your people to raise their readiness level, okay? If I do a good job with my people, if I mentor and coach them in such a way that the readiness level rises to us, you know, three or four in many areas, if they have a critical mass of readiness levels that is in the three or four, wow, I can get my life back. I can go home early, go to the gym, do my hobby, spend time with my family, read a book, make lakwacha, whatever it is. But that is your goal. As a leader, you want to be an outstanding leader. Hey, you want to raise the readiness level in as many skill areas as possible. Okay, and you do that through mentoring and coaching. And finally, be secure. Progressively delegate and empower your people as their readiness level rises. Once again, Iron Mike would not do that. He trained his people, but he would not empower them. You know what? This is another dimension where it argues the case that leadership is spiritual or it's nothing. Because, you know, be secure. This is an issue of self-esteem. If you're not a spiritual person, wow. If the basis of your self-esteem is on how much power you hoard, you will never empower people. But most managers are like that. Their power rests, or their self-esteem rests in how much authority, how much power they have. So when their people are ready for empowerment, they can't do it because their security rests. If I empower Faye and the project needs 10% of my power, then she gets 10%. I only have 90% left. Then I empower Nomer. And if that project needs 20% empowerment, I give him 20%. I have 70% left. And so forth and so on. The more people I empower, in theory, I become the least powerful person in the organization. In theory. But you see, if I empower people correctly, the premise is that the relationship is so strong and the person is so well mentored and coached that actually power never comes out of me. Because the relationship is very strong, they will still acknowledge me as their leader. But even if they did not, the key is this. My self-esteem cannot rest on how much power I retain for myself. So, let's talk about the principle of self-esteem. The principle of self-esteem is as follows. My self-esteem develops when someone significant to me loves me unconditionally. Children, as a result, get their self-esteem from parents. Because parents, in theory, love their children unconditionally. And parents are significant personalities as far as the children are concerned. So, someone significant to me loves me unconditionally. As a result, my self-esteem is built. The problem with that is parents are just like you and me. They're humans. And parents make mistakes. And parents blow it. Often. That's why there's so much dysfunction in homes today. So parents cannot be the ultimate source of self-esteem. Well, you know the story. The most significant person in the universe, his name is God. And he loves me and you unconditionally. And the more you develop the vertical dimension of your life, the spiritual dimension of your life, the more you learn about him, how significant he is, and how unconditional his love is for you and for me. And that's how your self-esteem is built. If, therefore, the spiritual dimension of your life is well developed, wow, you will be a very secure person. And you can be empowering people left, right, and center. Are you with me? I have another homework for you, putting it all together. Page 37. Okay, that is self-explanatory. The last bullet is the most important one. Okay, get an accountability partner. Oh, teka muna, may benefits pa, no? Sorry. Benefits. Right. 36. Readiness-based leadership benefits significantly enhances the leader's effectiveness in achieving sustainable results. I want you to underscore or encircle the word sustainable. You don't have to be a readiness-based leader to achieve results. But I guarantee you, they will not be sustainable. Okay? The situation with Esther and Teddy is not sustainable. Esther is about to get fired. The situation with Iron Mike and his people is not sustainable. They're about to resign en masse. So you don't have to be a readiness-based leader to achieve results. Good results, but they will not be sustainable. You will burn out, or you will burn your people out, or all of you will burn out. So, ang benefits ng readiness-based leadership is sustainable results. Right? Number two, promotes an environment that nurtures initiative, creativity, and efficiency, helping both the follower and leader achieve their full potential. You know what? I discovered something in my experience. The greatest beneficiary of outstanding leadership is the leader himself or herself because of self-actualization. Sure, you will help people. Sure, you will help organizations. But you know, the greatest beneficiary will be your own fulfillment, your own joy and satisfaction, okay? And you achieve this if you become a readiness-based leader. It makes work life more pleasant and stimulating for the leader and his people. And it can be applied to home and other personal relationships. So those are the benefits of readiness-based leadership. And I want you to reflect on those as you do, as I want you to do your homework on page 37. I know you will do this, all the homeworks I've assigned you, because if you don't, God will tell me and I will tell HR. Okay, so. So, page 37, that's self-explanatory. That's for reflection. The last bullet is important. I want you to get an accountability partner with whom you can openly and regularly discuss your difficulties and progress in becoming a readiness-based leader. This person, ang qualifications ng taong ito, A, he or she knows you very well. B, he or she is not afraid of you. C, he or she will give you his or her opinion about you with or without your permission. In other words, this person and you are like this. She or he knows you so well, the conversation could go, okay, hey, stop it. Huwag muna akong bulahin. Kilala kita. Tigil muna yan. You need a strong accountability partner. Iron sharpens iron. Okay? And it's very good if you get an accountability partner. It's good advice. All right. I have a 4-minute video and a 1-minute closing. And then I turn you back to Karen. So can we do the Derek Redmond thing? You've probably seen this video, but I want you to see it again anyway. In the version that I saw, towards the end, the father let Derek Redmond run or limp his way to the finish line. Okay, I show the video to say a couple of things. Number one, excellent people management or outstanding leadership is a finisher's race. You're not racing against anyone. It is a finisher's race. Okay. My opinion, you are R-Force or are on your way to becoming R-Force very soon. Okay. Derek Redmond was a definite R-4. He was not only qualified to run the 400-meter race, he was favored to win it. But life is such that things don't always go the way we want them to. And if my experience is any indication, hey, I have news for you. You will fail. I have failed. I have failed so much. The reason why I can teach so much is I have failed so much. You will fail. But you know what? It's okay. It's okay. You rise up. Because you never run alone. Okay? You never run alone. The father, I thought, represented God very nicely, except when he was waving away the people who were trying to help them, because, you know, when the son fell, he broke through and he said, you don't have to do this. And Derek said, of course I do. Then he said, well, in that case, we'll do it together. And he walked his son to the finish line. What the video does not show is towards the end, being an excellent coach himself, the father empowered the son. Nung nakita niyang the guy was committed to limp his way to the finish line, he left his son to finish his race. Leadership is a finisher's race. Okay? And you stick with it. The message I have for you is you never run alone. Because God is there and He will help you. He will help you. Okay? You know what? I don't know, and most people don't know who won that race. We know who got a standing ovation. It was Derek Redmond, because he finished the race in spite of his brokenness. So I hope you learned a few things today. I look forward to our next meeting on April 30. Thank you very much, and God bless you.